News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage.
In association with AIR.
Well, in a shocking turn up for the books, a lot of people don't want to cycle because it rains on them a fair bit. However, cynicism aside, there is good news. A new survey which has been done by RedClick looks at people's likelihood of cycling and the number of people who would like to and who choose to cycle on a daily basis. And it looks like the positivity towards doing so is increasing. Ciarán Cannon is with us, President of Cycling Ireland. It shows you're getting places, Ciarán.
Good morning, Anton. It certainly does. It shows that people have always assumed that somehow Irish people are unique in the world and that they don't want to cycle to work, to school, wherever. But this study published today shows exactly that, as you said. It shows that people, first of all, recognize the health benefits. They obviously recognize the cost savings. They obviously recognize the quality of life positivity that cycling brings. And what they're telling us clearly is, yes, we want to cycle, but we don't feel safe enough in doing so yet. And that's the experience from every other country that has been looking to develop its cycling infrastructure over the last 40 or 50 years, you know. And the Netherlands, and we've been mentioning the Netherlands a lot, they did not become a cycling country because Dutch people are somehow more resilient or fundamentally different from Irish people. They did it because they built roads where people feel safe, including women and children. And that's one really kind of revealing aspect of this particular survey, is the level of fear that exists amongst women in particular around cycling. So the real challenge for us now is people do recognize the benefits. It's responding to that. And, you know, the kind of the canary in the coal mine here is are our children and our women. And once our children and our women feel safe cycling on Irish streets and Irish roads, we'll know we have solved this problem.
And why do you think there's that gender disparity?
Because it has been the experience of every other country that women are more fearful of operating in a highly trafficked, highly congested road environment than men. That's just the way we're made. And when you solve that problem, when you make cycling infrastructure safe, segregated, and most of all connected, so that when you're cycling in the morning, let's just say you decide to, I don't know, cycle from Stillorgan, Fibsborough, Salt Hill, Dooradoyle, wherever it may be, once you go out your front door, you have soon have access to safe, segregated cycling infrastructure that gets you all the way to where you need to be. Connectivity is so important. So painting lines on a road is not solving the problem. And, you know, generating maybe 200 or 300 meters of a cycleway and then turfing you back out into a heavily trafficked street or road is not the solution either. And if you look, and again, we'll mention the Netherlands, the participation, the gender breakdown in cycling participation in the Netherlands is exactly 50-50. In fact, in some cities, it's 55%, 60% of women versus 40% of men. So the solution here is not to assume that women are somehow different to men when it comes to cycling. It's just making it safe for all. And you know, I don't know about you, Anton, did you cycle to school when you were a kid? I certainly did. And another benchmark of how successful a country can be and should be is what percentage of children cycle to school. So in Ireland right now, 3% of our secondary school students cycle to school. In the Netherlands, it's roughly 75%. In Finland, it's around 50%. And again, that's down to parents' confidence that when their child leaves their home on their bike, they're going to get to school safely. Now, it's all about safety, safety, safety.
You've mentioned the Netherlands a couple of times. Of course, one of the things that the Netherlands did was they really grasped the nettle by making the choice that said cycling takes primacy and we are pushing cars off these roads, almost in totality in some instances. Do we need to get to the same position, and will it be politically acceptable to get to a position where the car is no longer acceptable in city centres?
Yes, we do. You know, it's not a case of one mode of transport having primacy over another. It's acknowledging that everybody has the right to move about safely, irrespective of their choice of mode of transport. So whether I decide to walk, cycle, take public transport or drive my car, I can do so in a safe manner. And in some cities, yes, that will involve a realignment, a redistribution of the road space. I mean, Bus Connects is doing that already in many of our cities, where, you know, a vehicle that moves 90 or 100 people very efficiently around a city takes precedence over a steel box that carries one person in it and a sofa and two armchairs, you know, and that's ultimately where we need to go. And this can be done, and it can be done in a fairly rapid manner. You look at what Mayor Anne Hidalgo has done in Paris over the last 5 years. She has transformed her city. Sadiq Khan has done the exact same thing in London. These were, you know, a decade ago, again, highly trafficked, highly congested, very unhealthy places to move about in. And both Paris and London now have seen absolute transformation because of political leadership, now, as you mentioned.
You won't be surprised. Making the sorry to cut across you, Kieran. You won't be surprised that there's a lot of text coming in. You won't be surprised by the nature of some of them. So let me bring them to you. Problem isn't rain. It's wind. The Netherlands is flat, and it doesn't have the same level of wind. Infrastructure will not solve this problem. Do you want to put words around that sigh, Kieran?
The Dutch didn't solve weather. They solved their roads. I mean, look, let's just compare the two cities, Dublin and Amsterdam. Dublin receives about 730 millimeters of rain annually. Amsterdam receives about 840. And interestingly, they both have roughly the same amount of rainfall days per year.
But the wind, and they're flat.
That's nonsense. You know, I mean, people who cycle in Amsterdam don't care if it's windy, they don't care if it's wet, they don't care if it's cold. If you look at places like Finland and Sweden, which are far colder, darker and harsher than Ireland during the winter, their participation rates remain perfectly normal and aligned with the rest of the year. And let's just look at one really excellent piece of research that Dublin City Council did last winter. They put a counter, and they already have counters on all of their cycleways into the city. But one of the most impressive pieces of cycleway infrastructure right now in Dublin is from Clontarf into the city centre, that whole route from kind of Howth in along by Clontarf and into the city centre. It's a phenomenal, it is the exemplar for what we should be doing across the whole of Dublin and indeed our other cities. There's a counter on that. It counts how many people use that every morning. And last winter, for a period of over, I think it was 2 months, Dublin City Council compared rainfall data to counter data. And when it rained more, guess what happened, Anton? People just kept on cycling. There was no perceivable or perceptible drop in cycling participation on the Clontarf route.
Okay.
Why? Because it's wonderful.
Let's go to the Hardy Perennial then, because it's coming in repeatedly. Would you ask Kieran Cannon, as head of Cycling Ireland, to put more focus on the dangerous and poor road habits of cyclists? Red lights don't apply to most of them, it seems.
Also untrue. There's been numerous studies carried out internationally, including here in Ireland, about red light braking by motorists, cyclists, and there is no evidence, none, that cyclists brake at red lights any more than motorists do. I will email you the data afterwards, Anton, if you wish to read it. It is there for everyone.
I don't wish to put anecdotage against your statistics, but anybody who has gone through, I'm not being not laying blame at their doors, maybe it is a wise choice to do it, but anybody who sat in traffic in Dublin City Centre has watched cyclists happily and with oblivion tootle through red lights. I mean, it's fairly common.
Again, the data shows otherwise. The Gardaí themselves did a study about 4 years ago, and it said that there was a greater degree of red light braking by motorists and cyclists. Trinity did research. They found the same thing in Dublin and Galway City. And bear in mind, we had, and I don't know why we decided to abandon this idea, I gather we're about to reintroduce them again, and we had red light braking cameras installed in two locations in Dublin City. And over a period of a couple of months, they detected thousands of motorists breaking red lights. So, but let's get back to the debate about, you know, if a cyclist breaks a red light, they're only endangering one person, and that's themselves predominantly. If a motorist breaks a red light, the motorist is endangering all other more vulnerable road users around them. And if you look at the data from last year, Anton, 40%, sadly, of all road deaths last year were cyclists and walkers and pedestrians. These are people who pose the least risk to all other road users on our roads, but they were ultimately the victims of road violence and lost their lives. And we're losing somebody on Irish roads every 48 hours now. So, you know, if cyclists have only one concern. I mean, I cycle in Galway City. I've cycled, obviously, I cycled when I was working in Dáil Éireann in Dublin City for the guts of 15 years. I cycled in Dublin when I was in college back in the 80s. Cyclists only have one objective. One objective is to get to where they want to go safely. That's it. They're not out to endanger anybody else. They're not out to You know, and if we acknowledge that, and if we begin to respond to that, and this survey that you're referring to this morning, it shows that when you offer people the choice of embarking on a safe cycle to or from work, they will avail of that avail of that opportunity. Carol. And finally, can I just say this? You know, cycling is a legitimate transport choice for everybody. And right now in Dublin City, this morning, there are more people cycling to work and to study than those who are taking the Dart and the Lewis combined. So something is happening. Something is changing. And if we want to allow that to continue and allow that to develop and to flourish, right, we just need to respond to cycling.
In a fit of irony, I have to wrap up because we have to get an update on the traffic and travel after we get this break. Kieran, thank you so much. Kieran Cannon, President, Cycling Ireland.
News Talk Breakfast with Anton Savage. In association with AIR. Weekday mornings at 7. News Talk. Conversation that counts.